ladies and gentlemen, congoers and non-congoers, gamers of all ages, of all interests, anything in the tabletop community is fair game at Gen Con. My name is Jared, and with me, the wonderful, the always winning, except for lone wolves, the magnificent,
the very tired, Anna. Hello.
We will be your hosts for the episode. We are honored and grateful that you've joined us here in our Honda Odyssey as we drive home from Gen Con. Today, we are discussing all the things that happened at Gen Con, except we can't talk about all the things because that would be a very long episode. But we are going to talk about some of our highlights, some things that we saw, some games that you can be excited about that are going to be either released in the next few months, are already released, might be released next year. And we're going to do our very best to entice you to come to Gen Con next year, because as two people that have been coming to Gen Con for more than a decade, it's great.
So, as over 70,000 people, including the two of us, make our way home after Gen Con, settle in with us, get cozy, and let us discuss what some have called the best 4 days in gaming.
Some. Dozens even have called it that.
It might even be the tagline of the con.
Yes, I would say over 70,000 people have used that subtitle.
Well, anyway.
Anyways.
Let's get started. We'll do a little bit of a general discussion of the con itself to see if you feel like it might be a good option for you to go to next year. And then we'll discuss some specific games and things we're looking forward to.
Sounds good.
So, Jared.
Yes.
There's always some surprises when we come to Gen Con.
Of course.
I mean, that many game distributions, companies, and that many people.
Yep.
There's bound to be a few surprises. Tell us some of your surprises from the last 4 days.
Okay. Yeah, so I have a surprise game that we actually found today on Sunday. And I also want to talk about something I'm noticing. You know, we've been going, like I just said a minute ago, we've been going to Gen Con for over a decade, and it's been really interesting because for many, many years, there have been a few standout must-have, must-buy, day one opening moments. Like, we learned in our first few years of Gen Con that there's a chant of do not run. Now, they've gotten away from that. I don't know why.
They chanted it when I was in the mob.
Did they do it?
The first day, yeah.
Nice.
A few people were still doing it.
I love it. I think it's so great. But it stems out of this old idea that there's just a few things that you have to run and get on day one in the opening moments or it's going to sell out. But that, to me, from my observations, has really shifted in the last couple of years. I noticed it some last year. I've noticed it even more this year. It's very interesting to walk the halls to not have just one thing that like is all the rage and all the buzz. I remember, and we've talked about this before, Codenames took Gen Con by storm, and you saw it being played everywhere. Everyone was talking about it. And now it's almost shifted. It's almost like you're hearing whispers about some of the games that got a lot of pre-con hype. And some of them you're like, eh, maybe we just got caught up in the hype. And some of them are like, yeah, it really wasn't for my table. But there's still a lot of people that like those games, don't get me wrong. But the flip side of that is that there's such a wider spread of good games that are getting exposure, even though at this point, it's almost impossible to answer the question, what's the game of the con? Because I think we're in a stage where there's not a just one game of the con, because the hobby is evolving and it is getting to a place where we are becoming very diverse and unique in what we're wanting out of games, which I think is great. And it's leading to a space where it might be your game of the con. It might be, I like these 6 or 7 from the con, but I don't know that there was one standout. I think that's very healthy for the hobby. And it's a very surprising thing to see, given what we're used to in the history of Gen Con. And then as far as the game that I found most surprising, The Chef's Apprentice by Sasquatchy Games. Now, this is a family company, from what I gathered, because we got over there and we just stumbled upon it. We were going back through the indie publisher area back in the back corner, which I must say, crushed it this year. I feel like almost every booth back in that corner did amazing and had a lot of really good things going on. So really excited for the up and coming group of new publishers. But this one in particular, the owner of the company, the dad, was not there, but the two daughters were. And they walked us through this game. I'm very excited for it. It's got a low price point. It's got a lot of fun theme going on as you're making all these different recipes and as you're cooking up stuff. And it's all for monsters. It's not just regular dishes. So you got lots of fun things going on. And the components look great. And I had heard nothing about this game. It's a very small company, but I think they've got a lot of potential. And I'm looking forward to cracking the shrink off of that one and giving it a go. So those are some of my surprises from the con. What about you?
Yeah, so I'll say, again, also something that I noticed about the industry itself and then a game that kind of surprised me. So I think being in a place where we're trying to observe and do a podcast and getting to meet more people. Last year, I mentioned that I noticed that a lot of people were demoing their own games. So games that they personally had produced or that they had developed or that they had done the artwork for or that they had designed. And this year, I kind of an expansion of that. I was very surprised to realize almost every single person in the board game industry is bivocational. It was very rare to come across somebody where working for this publishing company was their full-time job. Now, there are some very big publishing companies. But like Jared mentioned, there are tons of excellent companies that are more up and coming and they only employ part-time people. And so I just kind of loved that. I loved meeting people who were all the roles in one, like the dad and the daughter team that you just mentioned, Jared. We met one guy that had been working 10 years on just his one passion project game that he showed us. And it was great. And you could tell he'd worked 10 years on it because he had changed things and he had developed it and he'd done excellent art. And it was just really, really cool. I loved seeing that because I feel like it speaks to the passion of the people in this hobby.
Absolutely.
And the accessibility of the hobby. You don't have to quit your day job to go and get involved with the board game industry. You know, some of us are podcasters who are investing in the hobby while still working the grind at our daily job. And honestly, most of the employees at game companies that we met were also investing in the hobby while still working the grind at their daily job. And so that was a cool, encouraging thing to see. Obviously, I'd love to see the hobby grow to where it could employ people full time, but it made it feel homey, the fact that we were all just regular people. So for example, we met a lot of people, but a couple stand out. So we met Nick, who did a marketing meeting for us with Weird Giraffe Games. And later after that meeting, we became friends because we were all newbies in a random pop-up Blood on the Clock Tower game that lasted until 1 a.m. And so we were definitely all very tired buddies by the end of that game.
And that game got super intense.
Oh, man, it did. It got really intense. And we were all like, this is only our first or second time playing it. We were like, oh, my goodness, what have we gotten ourselves into? It was really, really fun. We also met Dylan from Charming Games Collective, and he did a great job running us through all of the cute games at Charming Games. And then we got to eat baby carrots together, and he told us about being a teacher in China. So just lots of really great, really normal, or you know, maybe we're all just our own version of weird would be a better way of putting it. People just enjoying games together, and that was my surprising thing from the con. I do also have a game that surprised me as well. We discovered a game called Little Game Masters. And this is a very kind of indie game as well. In fact, it's produced not even by a company, but just by the person himself who made it.
I was going to say, this is about as indie as it gets.
It's pretty indie. We saw this game and then went searching the con for it and could not find it because it wasn't produced by any company. You couldn't just look it up. So we finally found like a related company that like knew of the guy and told us where it was. Anyway, it was just a phenomenally done intro to role-playing game package for kids. The guy that designed it, got to talk with him for a while, and he said it can that it can play all the way down to a training a five-year-old how to be the game master for their own role-playing game. We got to look through all the materials and it was just wonderful. They were very accessible, simplified handbooks that he had made of monsters and rules and how to make characters. There were some pre-made characters. There was a cute little game master's screen with information for little game masters on it. He had written a whole pre-planned adventure book, which I'm not remembering actually how many modules it had. It had quite a few, though, like 12 or more. I don't quite remember.
Like that. I can't remember off the top of my head either.
We did get a copy. So, you know, we'll probably be going through it and maybe reviewing it at some point in time. And then he had two storybooks that he had written, which actually came before all of the training kids how to be game masters material. And the storybooks were just stories that featured kids doing role-playing games and making up stories together. So really, really fun to discover that and a big surprise. I think I was telling people about it the rest of the weekend.
Yeah, it's exciting to see something like that. I'm excited for this one because of the accessibility. I'm very curious, since we have a five-year-old, how Hope handles it. And we'll see. I really do think this will end up on the podcast in some form or fashion.
Yeah, you guys will just have to wait and see. Find out more. Stay tuned. Well, Jared, let's move along to your favorite non-gaming experience, because Gen Con has a lot of non-gaming experiences for people to enjoy while they're playing board games, interacting with other people. So what was that for you this year?
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to piggyback a little bit off of the passion that you were talking about earlier. I want to kind of add on to that. One of the things I've noticed, and I will admit, as a new con goer, you don't notice it as much because there's so much to take in. But over the years, and especially the last few years, I've just noticed the amount of camaraderie that is in this hobby. Whether it's two gamers that met at the con and they get to see each other once a year, or it's publishers and exhibitors and, you know, different designers. We met Richie this weekend, who is being yanked back and forth by multiple publishing companies because they both want him to be a demoer. And, you know, so we got to sit and talk with him for a little bit. And he was kind of talking about all these different experiences that he's had.
Yeah. And on the flip side of that, I met, because Richie's in the industry a little bit. I met a guy the night that we did the Blood on the Clock Tower game that worked with Weird Giraffe Games as a demoer. And that's all he does. He's not involved in the hobby in a professional sense at all, but he enjoys coming every single year and being a demoer with Weird Giraffe Games. And they all knew him and they were all asking him, yeah, how you been this year? And that was really cool.
Well, and one of the normal questions that we ask is, are you on the team? Because each publisher has a lot of volunteers that come and we need to know who we actually need to talk to as far as connecting and that sort of thing. So I asked that question that night, are you part of the team? He said, no, I'm just a volunteer. And everybody else that was in Weird Giraffe shirts, they were like, no, you're part of the team. And so there's this, all this, like, we are here in this together. You know, there's all this hugging and just always catching up. And it's cool. And I love it. And it's just one of those things that this industry does such an incredible job of making it accessible for everyone and for bringing people together. It's one of the reasons I love it the most. And I just saw it more this year than I have in any other year. And I do want to give a special shout out to Mike and Kim from Tabletop Turtle. We met them at one of our meetings and it was really, it was a very humbling moment, honestly, because Kim immediately perked up when she saw who we were based on our shirts and said, oh my gosh, we saw you guys on Instagram and we were hoping we could get to meet you this weekend. And I was like, holy smokes, nobody has ever said that. And it was just this moment of, wow, that's so cool. And we got to talk with them. We met up with them multiple times over the weekend. It was just such a joy to get to know them for a few minutes. Looking forward to reaching out and connecting and doing some of those connections that I just described. So I for me, that's one of the non-gamer-esque things that's going on at the con that I think a lot of people can experience. Whether you make it a tradition to go with your group and you just stay focused on your group, I think that's fine too. We did that for a number of years before we started branching out. But I think there's just such an invitation for camaraderie at this con That's just so incredibly good.
I agree. And I'd say even when we did go as a group, it was always fun to meet people because, and going this year just with the two of us, we got to do that even more. We got to sit down at a table and meet other couples and other people that enjoy gaming. And just this year, going just Jared and I, after going several years with big groups where we would kind of, it would just be our group, honestly, at a table, unless we split up. It was really neat to see. I was telling Jared after the second day or so, man, we have met awesome people to game with. You know, I remember Josh, we played SETI with him and he did a great job. He was asking all the questions I wanted to ask and it was really fun. We got to demo a game that isn't out yet called Cola Wars. And the two guys that we played with there were also just wonderful, just cutting up. It's really fun to build that community at Gen Con. I completely agree with that.
Yeah. And I mean, everyone's there to play games. And I mean, obviously not everybody has a perfect experience, but I think on the whole, that is what that con, one of the things the con provides. What about for you?
Yeah. So I was thinking through because Gen Con does provide a lot that is not just board games. And they provide a lot that is board game adjacent. And so there's tons of merch, amazing t-shirt ideas, books, artwork that you can buy.
I would even jump in there and say you could have like your big three of board games, RPGs, and collectible card games as like your major, this is what Gen Con provides, but then also some of these things that you're describing.
Yes, definitely. Well, and I might throw in there VR as well, which is maybe a little bit more fringe at Gen Con, but is definitely there. We saw people doing VR and computer gaming as well throughout the con.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you've got all that, but then you've got all of this board game or even just geek and fandom things that are adjacent to that. And all of those are present at Gen Con. So I think last year I talked about that every single year a guy makes this huge, or a girl, I don't actually know who it is, sorry, makes this huge balloon sculpture. And so this year was beautiful as always. There's a card tower building area that then you...
Card Holla.
Yeah, called Card Holla, that then you get to bid to go and destroy in kind of like this LARP exercise where you get to destroy all these card towers. And there's also a playtest hall where you're playing games that aren't actually released yet. You're getting to meet their developers. Anybody can sign up to do that. You can come playtest a game that's not out yet and give feedback to the developer of that game or the designer of that game, whoever is the one that's demoing it for you. But I'd have to say that my favorite thing from this year was the cosplaying.
Okay, tell me more.
Yeah, so cosplaying is at a lot of cons. It's kind of what cons are sometimes known for, right? But... again, you were talking about kind of the evolution of some of the things you noticed at Gen Con. I feel like the cosplay this year was excellent. I feel like it was so, well, there's been a shift, I think, to more family-oriented, family-friendly cosplaying. I saw a whole group of princesses. One of them definitely is going to Disney. She had all of the mannerisms of Belle. She was doing awesome. And all these little girls that had come with their families to Gen Con were running up and meeting the princesses. And it was just the sweetest thing ever. I saw a group, a whole family that had dressed as Ghostbusters at one point in time. And they were all dressed up together. Several things like that. A lot of Pokemon themed or different kind of anime themed groups that had all dressed up together, or families that had all dressed up together. And then probably my favorite, actually, I saw a kid dressed up as a Jawa holding hands with their mom, who was wearing an R2-D2 dress. And I was like, this is perfect. The Jawa's leading away R2-D2. It was just so clever. It was really cute.
That's so really cool.
Really enjoyed seeing all of that. And I know people put a lot of time and effort into making their cosplay costumes, and it just adds to the con and is a really beautiful experience.
Well, and I got to make sure and give a shout out to the guy who did Fat Thor, because while not as elaborate as some of the ones that you mentioned, he did an amazing job with what he was trying to do.
It's true. He was pretty funny. Well, yeah, and we saw one girl that had crocheted herself an entire mermaid costume.
That was really cool,
all
too.
All by herself. How long did she say it took her? Like 17 hours or something? Like something ridiculous.
It was a long time.
A very long time. So again, people pour hours into these costumes, and it shows. They're really fun, and they're really, really cool to see. And they all love to take pictures with you. So if you come to Gen Con, don't be afraid to stop your favorite cosplayer and ask for a photo, and it'll just make their day.
Absolutely.
All right, shall we move on to some games now?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so we're just going to kind of go through some of our top games that caught our eye at the con. We're not really going to rank them this time because, like Jared was saying, there were a lot of front runners this year. And doesn't really seem fair to pick our top game of the con. So we're just going to talk about some ones that stood out to us. And we will try and note ones that we're planning on going deeper on later episodes, because that way you can be on the lookout for these if you want some more information about them.
For sure. So you mentioned that we met with Nick with Weird Giraffe Games. One of the games that he showed me, I am very intrigued to try out. It is Lore and Logic. And this is I think half my list, it's only six, but still half of my list is two player games. Now, this is the first time we ever got to go to Gen Con, just you and I. And while I love my big groups and taking care of them and setting everything up, I really enjoyed just having the two of us and having that opportunity to really explore two-player games a little bit more than we usually would. And so I think that's part of why that list is that way. But with Lore and Logic, it was kind of this interesting mix of adding Hanabi into a competitive game. Each of you are playing with these cards that you're trying to get in order from 1 to 9, and you pick two that you lift up and ask your opponent questions about them. And the goal is to get them organized in the correct way, but you have to set it up based on the answers that you get. And of course, you can only ask certain questions certain ways. It's got a very interesting, fun theme. It's within a universe that they've already made other games for. But essentially, you have dragons and mice. The mice are taking all the notes, and the dragons are going out and gathering the information. And so it's got a starry kind of feel to it. And the artwork is really beautiful. But to me, just having a competitive Hanabi option, especially at two players, just really intrigued me. Looking forward to diving into that one.
Yeah, and so a game that stood out to me was A Place for All My Books. So this is a new game by Smirk and Dagger. And when we got there on day three, it had already completely sold out. And there were at least 4 or 5 people that came up wanting a copy just while we were sitting there having it explained to us. So it is a beautiful, contemplative game about an introvert who loves books. And so it's got a worker placement aspect to it, where you're taking your introvert and you're going out into town and gathering what you need to get more books. But obviously, as an introvert, you get tired really easily. So then you've got to go home and you've got to arrange your books and read your books. And so there's also this kind of tile organization aspect to it, because how you arrange your books will obviously give you more points. It looked so fun. I definitely recommend checking it out, and we will probably be going deeper on it.
I hope so. I mean, I know it's one of those things where it's, when can we get it? You know, because
it's already
sold out.
Yeah.
He's got to get his stock in. And so as soon as we can get it, I'm excited to get it to the table. And it's interesting because this one really surprised me. I had heard a little bit about it before, and for whatever reason, it just didn't stand out to me. But seeing it in person, it looks incredible. The artwork fits it so well. Part of me wants to play the solo mode just to compete with my rival.
That's true. Yeah. So
it's got a really fun solo mode.
So you can compete either as two introverts, and whenever
I think it goes up more than two. I think it's a higher count than that.
Yes. So you can compete either against other players who are also introverts, and the way that works is none of you want to be at the same location as somebody else. And so when you go to the same location because you're an introvert, you'll leave and go to the park and you'll kind of recharge a little bit, try to stay in town as long as you can and get the books before you have to go back home and fully recharge. But if you play the solo variation, you're playing against an extrovert who is kind of the bot version of the game, but she's this extrovert who will go into town. She checks all the books from the library before you can get there, and you're kind of trying to race against her. It was a really fun way to make a solo aspect to the game. And honestly, a game about introverts has to have a solo aspect to it. So, you know, props to Smirk and Dagger for doing that.
And, yeah, 100%.
But still very thematic. I think that was what stuck out to me about the game the most, was how thematic they were able to make all of the actions and the feeling of it. And again, very contemplative, beautiful Really looking forward to playing it.
Yeah, I am too. If and when we get our hands on a copy, I expect us to review this one because I'm just so excited for it. Ian and I talked about this one during our preview episode of Gen Con. Battle of Hoth, the new Memoir 44 game, is out as of Gen Con. We were able to snag a copy, and Anna and I have actually already played it a few times. Apparently, Anna is really good at this game. I know, shock to everyone that Anna won everything except for one game, which I'm going to talk about later, and it might be my favorite game ever because I can win it. But
we're all very happy for you, Jared.
Thank you. But this game, Anna trashed me multiple times in our introductory scenario, but it is a wonderfully done re-implementation of Memoir 44. Plays super quick, easy to understand. It is Star Wars, so if you're looking for a quick 30-minute Star Wars game, then this is definitely one that's going to be up your alley. It is another two-player, unless you have multiple copies, in which case you can make a bigger board and a bigger battle, which is what we will end up doing. So very excited for Battle of Hoth, getting more. There's a ton of scenarios in the book. There's multiple heroes to choose from, and obviously we didn't get anything confirmed, but it is basically a guarantee that they will be pumping out more of these in the Star Wars universe, because there are a ton of Star Wars battles that are ripe to be added, just like they did with Memoir 44 and all the different expansions that they have for that. So excited for what else is coming, and excited to play these. In the meantime, like I said, a ton of scenarios. So definitely something that can hold us over for a very long time.
And I will say, just for people who are listening, wondering if this game might be for you, Jared mentioned that I played the game, that we played it, goodness, I think 3 or 4 times in a row, and that I really enjoyed it. And I am not somebody that typically enjoys that player versus player and moving around a map and attacking each other types of games. But I liked this one because it played quickly and because you were playing with a certain scenario, very kind of close quarters. I thought it was a really good way of doing that type of game. And I enjoyed it probably better than I've ever enjoyed that type of game before.
Well, what's really exciting is we only played the introductory scenario. Like, we kept playing it being like, hopefully Jared can eventually win. And we were like trying different tactics and just trying to feel out the game a little bit, because it is one that you've never played before. But it's definitely, I'm excited for what other scenarios bring.
So for my next game, I'm going to talk about Star Realms Academy by Wacky Wizard Games. And just so there's no confusion, Wacky Wizard Games, we found out, is under the same umbrella as Wise Wizard Games, but that's what they're calling their kind of new children's line of games that they're putting out. So we got to see a lot of really cool, really neat ideas for children's games coming out of Wacky Wizard Games. And this one stood out far above the rest. So Star Realms is already a game by Wise Wizard Games. It is a deck building game, and also a space fight game, because you're deck building and fighting with each other and trying to collect bases and things like that. So this children's version can be played by children that can't even read yet. They have simplified and done iconography for every single action and every single thing that the cards do. And so again, could play down to 4-year-olds and get them introduced to a deck building game. And I'll just be honest with you all, I don't know that any other company has even attempted to make a pre-reader deck building game. And so we are very excited to get this to our kids' table and to see how they like it, and hopefully be talking about it in the future with you guys.
Yeah, I'm thoroughly impressed with the attempt here. And they just kind of showed us a quick demo of it. But from what I saw and what I know about Star Realms, they really did the right thing as far as creating. I think a lot of times when we create a My First version of a game, what ends up happening is it gets too much carved out and it almost feels too simplified and too much like we're just holding the kid's hand. In this one, it really feels like they did what they needed to do to simplify the process of the game, but still leave the strategy and the thinkiness in there so that kids can learn how to deck build and then enjoy this game. I'm very excited to show it to our kids. I think that it's one that they could really get into. And if I'm, as I think most of you know, I want kids' games that actually teach them how to learn about different strategy and about the tabletop industry as a whole, not just something that's simple and keeps them busy. So very excited for this one. And it's another one that I expect will be reviewed. Much like, and I will say this, I think all the games on this list have high potential to be in the review category.
Yeah, and just one more thing to add about Star Realms Academy. Like Jared said, they have taken out some components, but it's still very much in the demo that we played through felt like Star Realms. And so this could very easily be a game where once a child did learn how to read, it's a very easy step to go over to Star Realms because there's only a few aspects that kind of, it adds a couple of other types of cards that are taken out, or it adds one or two other actions that are taken out of the more simplified cards. So that's something to look forward to as well, as a game that can really train your kids for a game that they can enjoy on into their adulthood. And because it is so similar to Star Realms, all you adults out there who like deck builders or who like Star Realms specifically can still find enjoyment in this game, and you're not going to feel like it's a dumbed down version
right.
that you can't enjoy.
Yeah, he was saying, the owner was the one that we were talking to, that he was, I forget his name, I apologize. He was saying that a lot of adults enjoy this. And I think it's something that if you wanted to introduce a relatively new gamer to deck building, this is a great way to go about it because it is simplified, but still strategic.
Definitely agree.
So another one for me, this one's a brand new one. I saw a little bit about it, but you know, I wasn't sure if it was going to be one that would come into our lineup or not, but I love Chip Theory. I love companies that try to make very high quality stuff because I'm a sucker for that stuff. But sometimes it means it goes outside of even my price point as much as I'm willing to spend on games. I actually saw Roth first just laying out on one of the tables in one of the halls.
It was beautiful. It's an eye catcher.
It is an eye catching neon battlefield, and it is so cool. And so essentially it is a area control game where you're trying to fight off these other of your opponents, and they all have different factions with different abilities, and of course they've got expansions for more factions that just do all cool kind of stuff. But the thing about this one is it can be taught in 10 to 15 minutes. It's got great components, but they're a little bit more simplified than the big time poker chip stuff that they normally do, and then the game plays in about an hour. And any area control game that looks as cool as this one does and just really pops on the table like it does, I basically blind bought it. They kind of did an overview of the game. Richie was actually the one that was teaching us that we mentioned earlier. And as he just kind of went through it, I was like, yeah, I'm going to buy this game because I really enjoy that kind of stuff. I enjoy Blood Rage is one of the games that we haven't reviewed, but it's one of my favorite games. And it's also area control. So I'm always looking for one that is one that's accessible to people that you can play in about an hour or so, but it also has a lot of strategic think to it. And so I'm ready to try this one out. I'm very excited for it. That's Roth by Chip Theory Games.
Yeah, and I'll say something else because we were talking as we had to look at a lot of Chip Theory Games things, including a pretty brand new line of children's games.
Yep.
So I think that's important to mention because if we're talking about Chip Theory Games and people have paid attention to some of their games in the past, you might say, oh, Chip Theory isn't for me and my family because they do kind of darker or really heavy or really long games. But they are branching out. And so I think that's exciting. They're doing shorter games like Roth. They're doing kids games. And especially Chip Theory's quality of game is excellent. Chip Theory's idea of how to put a lot of learning and a lot of strategy into game, that is showing up in their kids' games. And so those might be good ones to keep an eye on as we go forward.
Yeah, I would agree. I was more impressed by their solo line for the kids that are coming out than maybe the other ones. But I will say too, just across the hobby, there is a recognition that games need to become more accessible and they need to become a little bit shorter than some of the heavier ones might be. Not that there's not a place for the heavier games, but there is a ICU across the hobby of people that would like to get into this hobby, but maybe can't commit to multiple hour sessions. And so we saw a lot of that this weekend of publishers saying, this one's quick to get into, really easy setup, you know, plays in an hour, and then you can keep going. And I like that because for the most part, there is not a sacrifice on quality of game itself to where, you know, because I think we went through a stage in the 90s where you just slapped a name on a board and threw a couple pieces in and then said, this is a board game. And that's...
Way to diss all the 90s games, Jared.
I'm going
to
do that.
That was really
because
rude.
Outside of a couple, that's what it was. And it's very half-baked and could have been a lot more. And I think that publishers nowadays are really considering, how do we simplify but still keep the quality?
I think as opposed to to dismissing all the games in the 90s, you could see them as the building blocks upon which we now build today.
Thank you, sunshine and rainbows.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'd like to say. And on the flip side, I'd like to talk about a super heavy game that we got to play.
Yes.
It was so fun, called SETI. So Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence is what SETI stands for, which is a real agency. And so in SETI, it is a heavy game.
Oh,
it's a big game. It's a complex game. It takes about 40 minutes per player, the box says. And we played with three players, and it took every bit of that to play through our game. So it is a really fun game where you are all a part of your organization that is looking for extraterrestrial life. So you're looking for aliens. You've got actions that you're doing throughout, cards that you're playing that can give you actions, but then also actions that you can go and do as long as you have enough money and resources and things to do these actions. And the game kind of compounds and builds on itself, which is really cool. So as you discover and send probes and send ships to the far reaches of the galaxy, so first maybe you're just sending out a signal and you're seeing what comes back. And then you can send out an actual probe and then it can orbit a planet. And then you can send out another probe and it can land on the planet. And then eventually you get to this point in the game where you can discover two whole alien species. And it adds these whole two other components to the game with different resources, different rules, different places to go and explore. So that was an incredibly fun game to play through. And in terms of longer board games in general, I'd say it had one of the most fun themes of the games that I experienced at Gen Con this year.
It was really cool. And I will say, you know, just kind of sitting there at the table, we were several rounds in. It is heavy. I don't want to in any way downplay that, but I will say it was not as bad as I was expecting. And it was one of those things where once you get into it and you know what you're doing, then it all kind of makes sense and it flows together. And I'm excited. I would love to do this one more. We didn't get a copy of this one yet, so we have to decide if it's something that we think will make the table, because if it does, we 100% need to get it, because it is a very intelligent game. It is one that I can see where you can put together all these different combos and think about different ways of just going about your strategy. There's not just one way to do it. And I love that. But again, it is on the heavier side. So for those of you that aren't shy about that sort of thing, then I would highly recommend it. And yes, Ian, it's every bit as good as you thought it would be.
There you go, Ian. Maybe Ian can get it for us.
There you go. We'll let Ian buy that one.
Yeah, we'll play with Ian.
Okay, the next one. I already love this game because I beat Anna at it.
Also, so many times.
Also, it's a really good game. I mean, you guys, I never win against Anna, almost ever.
That is completely untrue. You win against me a lot, just not the first time we play a game.
No. No, it is very rare.
Oh my gosh.
But...
So anyway, they're probably here to hear about the game instead of our relationship dynamics.
Right. So, Lone Wolves by Wonderful World Board Games is a two-player trick-taking game where you are competing for different areas of control. You're playing on either side of a board, much like games like the two-player version of Lost Cities, and you're playing out cards on your side, and they're playing out cards on their side. Whoever wins the trick keeps their wolf face up, which is going to have a stronger value. But the person who lost the trick also gets to place their card with a value of one. But the more important part is that they get to collect a bonus token, which they can put anywhere on their side of the board. And it creates this very interesting dynamic where you don't necessarily want to win all the time. You just want to be able to kind of navigate what you need and also which tokens to grab when. And it is a fascinating dynamic. It is a very fun game. It's a very quick game. I think we played 4 or 5 times in a very short amount of time. And it is so good. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's crazy to me that a 2-player trick-taking game might be my favorite game of the con, but I was very pleased with it.
Yes, I agree. I think we recommended it to almost every person because you get a couple of days into the con and you meet people and they say, okay, well, what's good? And then we'll tell you what we enjoyed. You tell us what we, right. Yeah, because then you get good game recommendations. We recommended it to probably everybody. And again, I love trick-taking games. The area control aspect added onto the trick-taking game was fascinating. And the fact that I swept Jared, won every single trick.
Didn't matter.
And he still won the game because he was more strategic with the way that he placed his bonus tiles was a fascinating component to this game. There's a lot of strategy in a very quick play. Definitely recommend that you all check it out.
To be fair, I did win one trick. So you didn't fully sweep me, which actually I think helped me. But yes, it was one of those where I didn't win hardly anything and still pulled off a victory.
Exactly. Yeah. So moving along, I want to talk about Oh No Volcano, a very different style game,
goofy little game,
a much more playful game. Oh, man, it was so fun. So we walked past this table and Jared was, going on. And I said, no, we have to check out this game because it was played vertically. So you are climbers that are climbing up a volcano. And so the game board sits vertically and you've got your little climber pieces that sit on top of pegs.
It's pretty cool.
As you go up the volcano. But every single turn, the volcano's got some rumblings and some lava and some earthquakes and things like that. Like, volcanoes do sometimes. So every single turn when you draw a card when you play a card and you choose and it tells you which of your climbers you can move and how many spaces and that kind of thing, it will also tell you that you need to drop a marble down at the top of the volcano and then it will click, 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 click down all the little pegs and it could knock your climber completely off of the volcano or it could knock your opponent's climber completely off of the volcano. And the reason why it's bad to be knocked off the volcano is because you're trying to collect a set of gems. And the higher up you get, the different levels have different kinds of gems. So you really need to get at least somebody all the way to the top in order to collect the last gem that you need. There's some other components to it, but that's kind of the basic premise of the game. And it was just a really fun way to do a game where you're climbing up vertically and just letting gravity be the bad guy in the game and trying to figure it out. So I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah, no, it was fun. It was goofy and it was, it was one of those where you just got to kind of let it go a little bit and just laugh and enjoy the process.
Exactly. Yes. And so that game, I think, would be great for families, be great for more casual game nights, things like that. Again,
or even just as a filler, as one to like bring out for a few minutes while you're going between games.
Yeah, definitely. So that's Oh No Volcano by Game Right.
All right. So this was another one that kind of flew under the radar for me, but was a fantastic addition to the con. Spooktacular by Level 99 Games is a game where you are competing against other monsters in the game. Each player is a monster from a traditional or from a very...
You say like a stereotypical horror movie.
Yeah, it's a stereotypical classic horror movie. So like I was Killtron in my game where I was a evil robot that was going around trying to kill everything. And
I was an undead cowboy.
Exactly.
Called Outlander.
Yep. So, and there's like 20 of those and they all play differently. And they all have their own thing going on. So I was programming my deck. So I was the only character in the game that would program my cards. But then Anna.
Yeah. So my character being undead, I would steal victory points from other players. And so the ways that you can get points in the game is by either scaring meeples. So the premise is that you're playing in this movie theater because the monsters have come out of the movie screens and they're ravaging the meeple. Yep. That are in the movie theater. So the ways you can earn points typically is by either scaring people to different rooms or by gobbling them up and collecting sets of the 5 different colors and
That's
turning
right.
them in for tickets that give you victory points at the end of the game. But every monster has their own powers that they can do. And so, you know, you were programming things. I was stealing points from other monsters if I was in the same room as them. And the monsters were all so, so different.
They were.
Which is a really cool thing.
That was honestly the draw, was that every one of them played differently. They all felt very balanced. We played a 5-player game of it, full playthrough. And it was just so fun to watch the different ways that the different characters played. And especially in that higher player count, there's so much chaos that you can't really plan your turn until it gets back around to you, because the board state changes so much between turns because of all the different things that each monster can do. But it doesn't limit you when it gets back around to your turn. It's just one of those things that you're like, okay, I did this really cool thing. Now I got to think about what I'm going to do next time, but then I also have to wait. So it's this really weird mix, especially for characters like the robot, who you have to go ahead and program what you're doing. So it's just a very interesting game. And I'm very fascinated to see, once it's been played several times by one group and they know it better, what do you start doing when you know how the other monsters play and what you do to kind of counter that and try to keep them from getting what they need?
Which might take a while, though, because another thing that impressed us about this game is there are tons of monsters. So it only plays up to 5, like you mentioned, but I think there's like 20
yep.
different monsters in the box, which is just so fun that
they would
put
of.
That yeah. many variations. And at least the ones that we played with, the 5 that we played with in the game that we did, were lower complexity. So they get up to a little bit higher complexity monsters. And they were all very, very balanced. So when we ended the game, we were all there were at least like 4 of us that were within 5 points of each other at the end of the game.
That's right. And it was very close. I really think that this game has a lot of potential. I'm excited to play it again. To dive into it more, but the first playthrough was definitely a success.
Most definitely. So the next one I'm going to talk about is 12 Rivers by Good Games Publishing. So this game stood out because it engaged me on a Sunday morning at Gen Con. I'll say that to start off with, because I'm just going to be honest, I was a little bit tired at the last day of Gen Con. I mean, we all are. It's just yeah. a universal Gen Con experience, is that Sunday you're a little bit tired.
I think I experienced that saying about 25 times on Sunday is, hey man, it's Sunday, don't worry about it. Like,
yeah.
Everybody understands.
Nobody could find the right words for anything. Nobody could remember people they'd met earlier in the con. We're just all exhausted. It's been a long, amazing, full weekend. But so this game, we did sit down and do a demo this morning, and it was so fun. So the premise of the game is that you are taking tiles from a little river down at the bottom, and you are placing the tiles in slots on this river. And once everybody has had 3 turns placing their tiles in a 4-player game, you unstop the dam of the river and the marbles roll down the river. And the marbles start from 12 individual slots, but as they go down the board, they'll connect into bigger, 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 all the way till the little pool at the bottom. And so whoever has put their markers at the right stopping points will get to collect some of the marbles that fall down. And you can use them to fulfill different requirements on these characters that you can collect throughout the game. There's also cards that you can get, camp cards that can give you different abilities. And other than that, you're just kind of scoring victory points as you collect and fulfill the requirements on the different characters that you collect. But I thought it was a really neat component. Again, there's 2 games, I guess, of using gravity to make these marbles roll down and trying to think where they're going to land and trying to strategize. You know, if 3 marbles land here, then the person in front of me just gets to take 1. So even if I'm putting my piece underneath theirs, once they take their piece out, I'm going to get a marble next.
Right.
So there's a good bit of strategy involved. And the turn order was pretty interesting, too, because of how you put your pieces back on the turn order track at the end of the game. So a lot of really neat strategy components in a pretty, I'd say, more contemplative style of game, because it's about a river and the art was very pretty and everything like that. But that one really stood out to me.
I was going to say, I mean, using gravity was very different in this game. It was much more an aesthetic because there's a lot of strategy in deciding where to place your blockers to be able to collect the resources that you need. instead of in Oh No Volcano. I mean, gravity is actually part of the game.
Right. So, the, and that was the cool part about this game, though, is the game board isn't vertical like it was in Oh No Volcano. It's just slightly inclined. And you could have played the game without the marbles and gravity. You could have had this rule, okay, at this, you know, at the end of the round, where everybody's placed their markers, then you follow the trails and whoever they run into first gets that.
Right.
But they didn't. Instead, they had the marbles flow down the river with gravity, which I think just adds a lot to the game.
It was a really cool aesthetic, I will admit. All right. So this next one was not anything I was looking for. I didn't even know about it, but Gunfights and Gambling by Mid-Level Games was one of the first games that we ran into on Thursday morning. And he gave us a quick run through of it. We played a few rounds. It's, I will say it is everything I wanted Bang the, or not the dice game, but Bang the game to be. It's got
the card game.
Yeah, the card game. It's got these two opposing sides where it can be 1v1, 2v2, 3v3. It can be it can be a situation where there's some bluffing. It can be a situation where there's gunfights and there's
asymmetrical but balanced powers between the characters.
Yep, that's right. And you have to work together as a team. And so obviously Bang is a different game. It's more of a deduction game. But if I want a cool, fun team versus team Wild West game, this did it for me. And there's some chance involved, and it's very thematic. And obviously the guy that he runs the company and was also, he was in full accent and cowboy hat and just gave a fully committed demo. I loved it. Got me very excited. Went ahead and bought it right there on the spot. Excited to play it some more. Always love a good team game. But yeah, that's Gunfights and Gambling by Mid-Level Games.
And the last game that we'll talk about in this section of the podcast, we cannot leave this con without mentioning Game Makers by Bezier.
Yes.
So this is another game that we were recommending to people every single time we got that very familiar question. So what games have you been enjoying at the con? And a lot of the time, they had also experienced it, and they were also bringing it up and saying this was a wonderful game. So I know there wasn't a one game of the con, but this was definitely a very talked about game at the con.
Sure.
It helped that Bezier brought in a full forklift driven by a big stuffed panda whose name was, I don't remember.
I'm
I don't remember his name. We didn't learn his name, but I don't remember it. And the forklift was lifting up a pallet, and the pallet is where they were doing the demos and the playthroughs of this game.
And they did have plexiglass, so it wouldn't like fall through the pallet. Just
right.
Yeah.
So if you want to go back in some of our earlier podcasts, we have already discussed this game in depth. So I won't do that right here, except to just say that in this game, you are a game manufacturing company, and you are in the warehouse collecting your resources in order to build your games and then arrange them on your game shelf to earn bonus points depending on the types of games that you get and the organization of your games. And you can also use the same components that you're using to build games to do things like upgrade your factories, upgrade your abilities, and raise your victory point tracks to score at the end of the game. But the really cool draw to this game is that Bezier has done their legwork, and they have gotten permission to use the game artwork for about 400 games that are actually in production and games that people love. And so as you're playing through this game, it is so fun to come across, you know, one of my favorites, Through the Ages was in there. Wingspan is one a lot of people know. Just all sorts of different kinds of games that you can create in this game about making games, which is really fun. So again, a very talked about game, one that we are definitely really looking forward to following as it continues. And it is coming to crowdfunding soon, right,
Jared? September 2nd.
Yeah, so keep an eye on that. Definitely one to invest in. And it was really neat to see just the hype for this game all around the convention. Games that had been featured in the Game Makers had little cards with the QR code for the game at their booth saying things like, hey, this game is featured on the Game Makers. And so that was a really fun aspect of it.
It was really cool. It was a unique marketing idea.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was really cool to see that creativity from Bezier. Many of you know, again, if you go back to our other episodes, that we were able to demo this game before it was in production when they were still kind of playtesting it back in April. Got to do an interview when the game was announced. And we're really looking forward to following this game and just, yeah, excited for how excited Bezier is about their new game and promoting it.
For sure. And I do, I will hit some of the ones that we noticed that were on more of the hype train. Nature by North Star Games. It was a big hit. And if you're into that evolution line, Nature is a even more streamlined, cleaned up, fun version of that game.
And they've already got several versions out.
And they have several out and plans for many more. So if you're interested in that, then absolutely, it is a big hit. Another one was Lightning Train by Direwolf. Had a constant crowd all weekend long. And then another one was Ace of Spades by Devere. Also did really well as many other ones that we couldn't, you can't keep up with all of it. It's impossible. I remember walking, we spent all of Sunday walking the entire exhibit hall. And I got to the end and I was like, I feel like I've missed so many things. And it's not that I'm like rushing past because we spent the entire day in addition to other days walking through the hall, but there's just so much and your brain can't keep up with all of it. So you just got to be okay with the amount that you can take in and continue to learn more about the rest of it as we go.
For sure. So all those games that we just talked about right now are games that you can either pre-order or buy, or again, Game Makers by Bezier is going to be coming for crowdfunding pretty soon, so you can keep an eye on that. But we also were able to get a kind of glimpse at some games that are coming down the pipeline that will not be immediately available for you to buy or to fund, but I think are worth keeping an eye on. So we wanted to talk a little bit about that. One of those for me was Cola Wars by One More Turn Games. We demoed a version of this game, so not even sure if we demoed a prototype, I guess, of this game.
That's right.
And so not even sure if it's going to be in its final form. In fact, the designer was sitting there kind of observing as we were playing and thinking about if this was going to change or if that was going to change as we were playing through the game. But the overall play of the game was really fun. The concept is that you are a soda making company in the 80s. You get to name your company. So I came up with the wonderful 80s name of Gazoomble for my orange soda. And of course, exclusively marketed it to the youth market, which, you know, worked out great for me in the game. But essentially you are, so you can hire different interns all the way up to executives. You've got a vice president of your company. They give you different powers for either marketing your cola or actually producing your cola and getting it in different venues like in restaurants and movie theaters and fine dining and things like that. And you're scoring victory points at the end of the years of 1981 all the way through 1985.
Yeah, I imagine we'll be talking about this game again next year. It's very much still a ways off from coming into final product, but it was already a very good game. And I too am excited to see more about this. I imagine it will be ready for demo in final form next year as it gets ready to go to Kickstarter.
And so on the heels of that, we also got to be present for a special announcement from Paverson Games about a brand new game that they are going to be, well, I guess they've just announced that they're going to be making it.
This one's also another one that's going to be ways off.
Yeah, it's going to be a little ways off. But it was Ringyo, and we even got to meet the designer, Charlie McCarron. So do you want to talk a little bit about that one?
Jared? Yeah, so Ringyo is a game in feudal Japan where you're working to, I believe, restore forests and work through some of that. We didn't get hardly any details. There was just an announcement. But it's Paverson, who made Distilled. And we love Distilled. They made Luthier, which looks incredible. Also, I just want to say really quickly with Luthier, if you got the $400 level and got to have the
super deluxe
version, the super duper deluxe edition, the piano that is the dice tower plays music when you run dice through it, which is insane. I loved it. I loved it so much. I had Anna do it like 4 or 5 times.
It was so fun.
It was just such a great time.
But all that to say, Paverson makes good quality games.
Yep. So we're really excited to see what they do with this. Another one we found today that was very interesting. Bellows Intent has a game called Rolling in Wonderland that this one's going to be a little bit sooner. It looks a little bit more done. Probably coming to Kickstarter soon, if I remember correctly. And it is a dice drafting game in Wonderland. And I am very intrigued, both because there is some incredible art. There is a simplicity but strategic depth in the different combos that you can create with this game. And it just looks so thematically fun. It is also very accessible for kids, but also very engaging for adults as well. So that one, it just really caught my eye. I stopped immediately. Anna can attest that a lot of times I'm thinking about the next 6 things that I want to see. And so a lot of times I miss the smaller stuff and she's got to help me with that. But this one, I was the one that stopped and I was like, hold on a minute, let's take a look at this. So very excited about that one.
So there's obviously a lot more that we could talk about with Gen Con, but we have talked your ear off for an hour or more at this point in time. So we'll wrap up for now, but did want to say that we would love to answer any personal questions or comments or have conversations about Gen Con. Love to continue the conversation. So if you've got more questions, or maybe even if you're interested in attending Gen Con yourself and would like to get more information about that, please reach out to us through socials. Jared would be happy to talk through tips and strategies with you about how to do that.
Absolutely. And I'll just say, like, we've been doing this. We've been going to this con for over 10 years. We have done it in all kinds of different facets. And a lot of times in the past, I have just kind of spearheaded the project and taken on all of the planning, taking people that didn't want to do any planning or didn't know what to do or whatever it may be. So whether it's, you know, learning about the hotel situation or the events or what to get into or how the con works, or if you'd be interested based on your personality, or if you want to go, please let me know. We will definitely get that train moving. And I would be happy to answer any and all questions, because I think if you're in this hobby, it's a con that you should experience at least once, unless you hate crowds. I get it. If you hate crowds, it's probably not for you. But
I don't know. There were a lot of people that were manning it and with their noise canceling headphones.
That's
and
true.
Going off in corners when they needed a break. I mean, there's people that do that.
But it is an experience, and it is a major gaming event for sure.
That's right. So thank you for listening to us just gush about Gen Con.
Yes.
For the last little bit here. If you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts, we would love to hear from you. Links to our socials are in the description. If you don't like socials, I get it. You can check out our website at thegametablepodcast.com. Or you can shoot us an email at thegametablepodcast@gmail.com. Or you can find us on BGG. All of these links are also in the description. 5-star reviews, subscribing in your podcast player of choice, following us on socials, and joining the conversation on Discord are all heroic actions that are immensely helpful in growing this podcast. So thank you to all of you. Special thanks to Ashley McCaffrey for our new rebranded cover art, and to Anna Snyder, who made the intro and outro music. And please come back and join us as we discuss another game that was a big hit at Gen Con.
Ayo.
That we did not mention in this episode because we're going to review it in its entirety, and that is Vantage by Stonemaier Games. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.
And if you made it this far, I just want to go ahead and do a quick thing here. If you would like a sticker related to our new logo that you can rep and tell your friends about our podcast, or if you'd like a Table Topics sticker, please let me know and I will get it to you.
Goodbye.
Toodles.